session number 18830, Reel 3.
Mr. Yavojin, Reel 3. You were just telling me about your long wait to be trained in France as a pilot.
Yes, that's correct. Yes, it looked that we would have to wait a long time, and I think the authorities realized that and started sending groups of the young people to other Air Force establishments. I could at that time speak French because French was my language, foreign language in Poland at school. So I had some advantage over others, and I was an interpreter, translator for a time as my additional duty. From Lyon, we were sent to Bourget Aerodrome, Paris. For unspecified duties, I can't for the life of me recall what we were doing there, except we were in a rather grim looking, I can recall these pre-war establishments, the military or Air Force places where one lived, stone buildings with no windows. It sort of looked First War, cavalry establishments. Anyway, that was the kind of places. Can't recall even how we lived. One had to look after oneself, I think, most of the time. The pay of ordinary soldier was 50 centimes a day or something like this, which was not a lot even in those days. It was not easy. We had difficulty. The food wasn't fantastic, of course. French breakfast, military breakfast, I can still recall, was this aluminium sort of a mug of black coffee and a block of chocolate. I can to this day recall where issued this was our breakfast. And from there we moved to Deauville or to this area on the Channel. Observer training unit, which flew these very ancient French aircraft, really looked very, even to us, very old things of the First War. And it was there that we began to realize that the offensive started, the German offensive started, and we began to realize that very rapidly things weren't going well. What was happening, which I have never forgotten, was that RAF fighters began to appear. The squadrons began to land and stay the night and take off again. Among them, well, of course, we were a great admirer, we thought, compared with this antiquated French aircraft, RAF with its Hurricanes and Spitfires was just fantastic. Also, we were most impressed by, I certainly was, by the RAF pilots, who seemed not to require this continental approach to physique of the aircrew, which had to be barrel-chested, big, strong people with 110% health had to satisfy. Whereas my recollections were of one particular Hurricane pilot who, after landing, came out. We watched him. He came out, a little red-haired sergeant came out, saw us, smiled, and said something to us. And it took many years. And I thought, this is fantastic. The RAF takes anybody with any health. I was not particularly good physique and undernourished, you know, 16-year-old, hardly the sort of things that Eric was expected to be. And it took me many years to realize that this little sergeant was one of the RAF, later to be one of the aces, top RAF aces, squadron leader as he was to be Lacey.
Ginger Lacey.
Ginger Lacey. I never, yes, it took me many years just reading a book about the RAF's, where they were at the squadrons. I could correlate his flying with the squadron and landing at our station. So I had the correlation of this. However, as far as the, that was by then, situation in France was not very good in the sense that relentlessly the Germans were moving. And one day evacuation started of all these bases down south now. We were ordered to pick up as much equipment as we could. It was packed on the train, and we were put on the train and started moving by train back into France. I can recall Rouen, burning, chaos. And then the Polish authorities started directing the Polish units. By then, I think they have made arrangements for the Polish Air Force in France to be evacuated to Britain. That was Sikorsky. General Sikorsky has made some arrangements here in Britain. So we were moved to... No, I can't recall which. Still Saint-Nazaire, the northern ports with sunken ships. Stories of many soldiers dead in bombed out ships, and of course nothing, there no ship left to take us to Britain. And so we started moving down south again. I can vaguely recall Bordeaux, and then Spanish border, Saint-Jean-de-Luz. There we were unloaded, and this was it, really. That's as far as we could escape from the Germans, as far as we could go. And we were left there, what to do now. Nobody seemed to have any clear idea or say anything definite. This or that would happen, or this is what we can do for you. There was just everything in the air. What should we do now? We were pretty well aware that if we were captured by the Germans, they wouldn't be exactly pleased with us. We had already been the Poles from Poland. So we would not expect particularly good treatment. It was not on the books. We thought maybe we should go to Africa or to Gibraltar, perhaps, if we could get there somehow. And it was only then that somebody said, what about Britain? There is apparently a ship coming from Britain to pick up Polish airmen. And then was this agonizing time to decide what to do. Britain. Who are the British? Why should we go to Britain? If this is the second country that's collapsing into German force. If we escape there, if Britain falls, what happens then? But always was the RAF in our mind. It was so different from any other unit and approach to the fighting and general discipline. And then there were rumors that the ship was coming, British ship was coming, and I won't bore you with detail. It took, I think, about 2 days of false alarms, of checks. They organized us into some, put us into order, the more senior officers put us, made us stand in some order on the in the harbor, took detail, everybody had to give detail of where they were from. They were checked out as far as it was possible. Witnesses had to guarantee that you were the person you claimed to be, and so on. And after, I don't know, about 24 hours of breakup and saying, no, nothing's happening, suddenly midnight, everything was happening. We were told there is a ship waiting out in the sea. And we were taken to the harbor, and then by local fishermen and their boats to Arandora Star, was the name of the ship that evacuated thousands of Polish airmen. This was the last ship, I think, that came out of France. By then, France had capitulated formally, and there was no more fighting in Norway. The people from the north had no longer anywhere to go. And we managed to get on that ship, and that was how we got to Britain.
What were conditions like in the ship?
I have photographs of that. In fact, I located myself on some of these photographs on top. We just sat, there was solidly packed. Absolutely solidly, not just under, there was no cabin space or anything. Most of us stayed on the deck and just sat. There wasn't even space to lay down. We just sat for nearly 3 days, queued to go to the toilets, and some food obviously was given. Extreme overcrowding. I don't want to exaggerate that, but I think there were a few thousand of us, about 5,000 or something like this, on that ship. And the ship had to go out, far out into the Atlantic to get away from the Luftwaffe and from the U-boats. And we finished up in Liverpool, most certainly in Liverpool. We came on board. We marched, and I have photographs of people standing looking at us. We were a real something out of outer space, equivalent to see these foreigners. We were all in French uniforms mostly, and of course not fantastically disciplined. You know, it was just remnants of the forces that were arrived yet again. We were marched and we onto trains and taken to some camps around Blackpool. There we had camps which they opened, were building fresh camps for the army. And that's where we were put in the tents initially, for some time, and then put into real hard barracks, which was something tremendous. The first time we could wash and sleep on some solid place, and had been given clean uniforms, got rid of all the rather unclean stuff that really a lot of us carried. Lice right from Hungary to France. And there was a new world.
At that stage, did you think that England would survive?
We weren't sure. We looked and we watched the people with great interest to see what their attitude was to life, to us. And we felt far more hopeful. We felt that there were more signs of spirit, fighting spirit, Oh, definitely, much more so than in France. Oh, yes. But whether it would be adequate to this tremendous power that the German, with which they carried in the brutal way they pushed their way through Europe, remained to be seen.
How did the lack of fighting spirit show itself in France?
In the Air Force, the military men seemed not very spirited. They just seemed disinterested almost in what was happening. They're quite antagonistic to us because we, partly because we, they said how easily we've given, were beaten by the Germans. They felt they had, I forget how many divisions, the largest number of divisions in Europe at that time. The individuals were all right, but on the whole, people didn't in France at that time weren't particularly friendly to us or hospitable to us. They didn't feel that the Poles, in fact, they stood for something they didn't want to know. They didn't want to know about people being beaten by by Germany. They didn't want to know about fighting, really, and the implication where these were people who've gone through some terrible experiences which they didn't want to know about. Of that time, France, I'm not saying everybody, but I mean, there were fighting units and there were people, but they were tended to be exception rather than a rule.
What was the attitude of English people towards you in 1940?
They were fantastic. They really were tremendous. Interested, they were hospitable. They welcomed us and tried to talk to us as much as we were able to talk in English.
Did you get any training then?
I think what was happening initially, we had to wait while the Polish authorities were formalizing agreements with the British government. And it was mid-summer sometime when they did make a formal agreement for the formation of Polish Air Force in Great Britain with more detail of Polish squadrons to be formed and so on, training and so on. So we waited for that period of time. Once it began, once they've signed the agreements, we began to be processed by the various authorities, initially Polish doctors and then and Polish authorities. But it was to move to also to the RAF authorities later on. But it was at that stage, that we were in Blackpool by then, actually living in Blackpool. It was at that stage that my rather separate story starts, complicates, in that I was very friendly. In France, I got very friendly with one of the, I joined a group of student pilots from Poland who were being trained for military training in Poland. I haven't finished, they just started the primary schools. And I became particularly friendly with one of them.
What was his name?
Geniek, G-E-N-I-E in Polish. K at the end, Geniek, sorry. And he introduced me to the rest of them and they started, they said, you must become, pretend that you're a part of our school. This is the best way. So they told me all about the school, that taught me how to, what Polish trainers look like, the Polish aircraft trainers look like, and all the details of that. Until I was everywhere registered as a part of that training school in Poland. They vouched for me that I was a member, their member. There were no documents to show in those days. Nobody was expected to have carried. Some did. There were some documents that I have to this day, but of no significance, because no significant document could be carried around. So it all depended on the witnesses. So we went to, the first stage was, of course, it was assumed that we would be training for pilots. So medical board was the first stage of anything. And we went to the medical board in Blackpool. He went first, came out, of course, passed, because he's gone through all this in Poland. And so I went next and was failed. I was told that my health wasn't good enough to pass. I ought to really go to school. There are some schools being, Polish schools, and being organized in, I think, in Scotland. That I wasn't, my health wasn't fit. I think it was said my heart wasn't right or something. So shattered, I came out. I couldn't believe this was the end of the world as I knew. I had traveled all the way just for that one purpose, to fly. And of course, to a 16-year-old, to fly, to fight, you know, to be a hero, shoot down lot of German aircraft. And this was it. They said that I couldn't do anything. So we thought over this and brooded over it until we decided that there was a way out. Really, nobody knew anybody that well. I was actually told I could come back, because I said maybe it's just temporary, maybe because I'm too nervous or something. All right, you can have another medical. They gave me a date for another medical. So what we decided, we'd swap identities. He'd go for me. And of course, being fit, he would pass, and we would just get back. And when the school started, nothing would happen. So off he went. We swapped the card. Identity cards, and he went off to have a medical, and he was failed. And by then, I think we have been moved to a special unit of student pilots or something like this. And in the case, we were isolated and identified as those who should be. And sorry. I cannot recall detail, but I was, when he failed, by the time he failed, the school started, and I, as having passed, or so it seemed, passed the medical, was a part of the class. That was it. We were already attending classes, of ground classes for pilots under training, UT pilots. That was it. And he didn't, because not having passed, having failed the exam, he was kept in sort of a reserve of general employment possibilities. That's what it was. We were separated as far as the authorities were concerned, and as far as people around us were concerned. And when he failed, we found ourselves in a very difficult situation, in that we could not just swap then, and suddenly next day he comes and said, I am this, and he is this, and we've done this, we've swapped, because we knew that would throw us out, we would go into court martial or some kind of disciplinary hearing. That was because we would be identified. We are by then identified in each unit. And it was, we decided that I would continue. And he asked for another medical and was told that he could take another medical. He still felt, I mean, he was not that happy about it, because he was as keen as flying as any one of us was. But he felt that being fit, having actually flown and so on, he would have no problem in getting in. He felt just because they have mastered the day, that is, the medical authorities have not must have put a cross against my name, that I was just too young, too generally not really suitable to go to training. It was better to send me to school rather than train me, particularly as the doctors did not believe that I was the age. That I, at that time, did not look that I was the 2 years older person. So I started the training. He waited another 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I think, or something, when to have a medical, and they failed him again.
What was medically wrong with you?
What was wrong? I think I was never. I think they said my heart wasn't working right, or something like that. It later transpired, jumping, that there was nothing wrong with my heart. As a younger person, my heart beat, the pulse, I think, rate was higher than, may have been higher than acceptable, simply because I was very excited and worried about people finding out what was going on. Something along these lines.
Can you take me through your training, please?
I think the training was not unlike the training that the RAF at the time was going through, but with the exception that the Poles had examination, language examination, and I was one of the top people. I think there were two or three of us, the top mark out of about 150 people. I was in fact first overall out of the 150 of the ground training, but I also passed the one of the highest mark in English, and I was sent with about three or four people to an RAF, through the RAF line of training into RAF schools, whereas the rest went Polish people. By then had organized the Polish Air Force training units. They had initial and advanced training units somewhere in Hacknol, was I believe, and similar stations. So my training was slightly different from most Poles at the time, and that I went to RAF Carlisle for my initial flying training school.
Carlisle. Did you have any difficulty flying?
I had no difficulty in flying. I had, right from the beginning, it just came fairly fast. I think perhaps a little nervous at first, but I was soloed at one of the faster soloed. Gradually, I was one of the better ones, and became. But the thing was that I joined up with all people around me. The Poles were older people who have. Because the training was given in the priority was given to people who had already trained in Poland in order to accelerate and shorten the time required for the Poles to train. There was a selection in that order. First, the people.